One of the biggest new releases of the year, Prizm Basketball, is missing a lot of autographs. In fact, it happened to us here at Cards HQ in the Breaker Arena. A box was opened and there were no autographs inside. But this is not the only major problem that a manufacturer is having right now. We'll give you the details and debate what must be done now. Hello, sports card investors, and welcome to another episode of Cards on the Table. And I hate, guys, that we have to start with another controversy, another bad story from the world of sports cards to start the episode today. But Teapot Doug, this is a doozy. You know, the brand new Prizm Basketball in hobby box format just recently came out. And of course, these hobby boxes say that on average, you get two autographs per box. But there's a big problem. We started to immediately see reports on social media that people were opening up these hobby boxes and they were finding zero autographs inside. In fact, Firehand Sports Cards, a Breaker, reported that out of 40 boxes, 40 hobby boxes of 2023-24 Prizm Basketball, that there were 20 autographs missing. That means that, you know, one out of every two hobby 25%. Boxes has an autograph missing potentially. And then it happened to us here at Cards HQ. So this past Friday, a NASCAR driver, Ty Dillon, came into the store and said, I want to buy a box of Prizm Basketball. He bought one. He walked over to our Breaker Arena, sat down, live streaming on YouTube, opens the box. There's a crowd of people in the store watching. And guess what? No autographs in that box of Prizm Basketball. Others have reported the same thing. Guys, this is a problem. What needs to be done about this? What is your reaction to this? Doug, I'm going to start with you today.
Well, this isn't uncommon. If you've been around long enough, it's called getting paninied. When you open up a box, there's no autos in it. But usually, they're replaced with points or redemptions. And this is not the case. Now there's just nothing taking the place of those autos. It's extremely disappointing. It's right on the heels of their football Prizm having maybe fake autos potentially. So it's either fake autos or no autos. Pick your poison, right? Super disappointing. But they're not alone in this. You mentioned that, you know, Topps is having some issues as well. Seems like Topps has had a lot of issues recently, most recently with the first card.
Yeah.
And the one of ones on the back of it and everything like that.
Yeah, they advertised. They even did a marketing. Topps did a marketing campaign around the fact that they had these first cards in Top Series 1, these like kind of sneaky one-of-one cards, but then they now just recently announced they actually forgot to print first card on those cards. You can still tell if it's one of those because it has actually a little one-of-one on the card, but like the big advertising campaign, the first card designation didn't happen.
Yeah, but there's one giant difference between these two incidents. One of them is being addressed by the company, acknowledged, addressed, and has a solution in place. Whether or not you like that solution, that's up to you, but at least they're putting forth some effort. Panini is dead silent, as they always are, offer no sort of solution, as they never do. A matter of fact, we're not that far removed from when they actually filed a lawsuit to avoid honoring redemptions for autographs. Panini has done the exact opposite of what you should do in a customer service position, but it's not going to stop because we're not going to stop buying their products.
Yeah.
So what incentive do they have to actually improve their processes? I feel like none, and that's the really disappointing part.
Yeah, I think in that case, Panini was responding to a lawsuit. I think somebody sued them, maybe, and then their response, they said, we don't have this obligation to do this or whatever that looks like. But man, I am with you. And that's a great example, Doug. So when Topps discovered that the first card wasn't properly printed on those Topps Series 1 cards, they not only posted that to social media and said, hey guys, we made a mistake, and if this happened to one of your cards, if you find a card that's a one of one without that on it, let us know. We're going to swap out the card. We're also going to give you a credit. Not only did they do that, but they actually contacted us here at Sports Card Investor, and they said, hey, could you help amplify this news? We made a mistake. No. Can you put this news out on your own news channels so collectors know that we made a mistake and that we're committed to making it right? What has Panini done on the Prizm autos? They haven't contacted us. Not only have they not contacted us, they put no statement out on social media as of at least the filming of this video. They have no statement on their blog. There's no statement on their website. I checked all of it today just to see, you know, have they put anything out anywhere, even acknowledging that this has happened in any type of public format, the answer is no. That drives me up a freaking wall.
And they might not.
It drives me up a freaking wall. It is insanity, and I hate it for collectors. I hate it for collectors that we have a serious problem here with one of the premier hobby releases of the year, and the manufacturer is not acknowledging it publicly. Acknowledge it. Say what happened, apologize, make it right, have some method. Topps is doing it, Panini is not, and I find that to be loathsome.
Yeah.
They need to address the issue. If they address the issue, everything will be okay. There's also another interesting wrinkle in all of this. I don't know if this is the case, but I know now Fanatics owns a printing facility that a lot of Panini's products are printed through. Maybe this was actually Fanatics' screw-up. But if that's the case, I don't know if that's the case or not. If that was the case, why wouldn't Panini say that? Why wouldn't Panini say anything? Yeah. Even if they don't want to say that, say anything about what happened here. Topps is showing how PR should be run. Panini is pretending this never existed. Anyway, all right, Teapot.
That little Stephen A. devil on my shoulder has hopped over squarely. He's hanging out with you today. I like it. I feel like this time I just sort of went, First of all, not great for the shop when you have a premier individual coming in with people watching saying, let me open this product. And I bet not everybody else watching rushed over to buy a box of Prism Hobby Basketball. But there's just problems with hits in general that have been compounding year over year. And Doug alluded to some of these. We've got fake autos. We've got auto pen autos. We've got autos as redemptions that expire and then you can never get anything else. You've got autos as Panini points. Most autos are now sticker autos. And then let's go down the path of relics, where it's not even from a player. It's not even player worn. It's just cut off of something. And it's so bad that it's to the point where Panini's the one doing that, where it's not from any player. And the verbiage on the back of the Topps cards that squarely say game use memorabilia on the front of the cards now confuse people coming over to Topps products because they see a similar verbiage that reads like Panini's on the back. But it's actually game used. So that's another whole dynamic where people are even getting confused about what these are all supposed to be called hits.
Yeah.
I don't think you can have that in a $1,000 hobby box. It's literally criminal, in my opinion. You're advertising something. Now, they'll probably say, well, we said on average, not guaranteed. Two autos on average, not guaranteed. And suppose that's the legal loophole, but it's really frustrating.
And it's not on average. I mean, it's not on average. There's no two autos on average
three.
In this product.
Nobody hit three.
No one's hit three. In those boxes. No one's hit four. Yeah. But we've seen boxes with zero. A lot of boxes with zero. You know, so, I mean, it's... All right, I know we went a little over on time there, but
I can keep going.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really find that frustrating. Look, mistakes are going to happen. I have all the sympathy for Topps and Panini with the volume of cards they're producing and with the complexities of the manufacturing, the number of people that have their hands on that. Mistakes are absolutely going to happen.
Yeah.
And all you need to do when it happens is just come out and acknowledge it and make it right.
Yeah.
Apologize, acknowledge it. Say, here's what we're going to do about it.
If you're going to charge record prices for sealed wax, say something.
$1,000, $900 for one of these hobby boxes. That's what the guy paid. That's
send
what
out your white
paid.
Sparkle
900
packs.
Bucks. $900 for the hobby box.
Yeah.
And he gets no autos.
Yeah. If you have proof you got no autos, send it in to us. We'll send you a white sparkle pack or something to make up for it.
Right? Yeah. Well, we won't. Panini should.
No, Panini.
Not us.
Panini.
Panini. No. Yes.
Teapot will.
Yeah. I won't.
You will. All right. Okay. All right. Let's talk about a little bit of a happier topic, guys. Let's talk about PWCC's weekly auction this week. They have a card I absolutely love. They have the 1980, rookie card. Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Dr. J is on that card. All autographed. Love it. Absolutely love it. It's a PSA 7 with an auto grade of a 10. I own one of these that is not graded with an auto grade of a 10. PSA 7 is actually a pretty hard to find grade in these cards sometimes. You know, it's as you get up that grading scale, a lot of these cards had a lot of defects. So that's not a bad grade for this card. It's a nice looking copy. Maybe I'll upgrade my copy. Maybe I'll make a bid on this. Teapot, what do you have your eye on in PWCC this week?
I'm going a little against the grain here, I think squarely with a pretty good investment piece. It's the 1999 Pokemon Fossil.
Pokemon!
First edition booster box sealed.
Oh, hoping
it's not G.I. Joe cards inside. Should be Pokemon, but that's, I think if you're looking at something to sock away for a long time, that's a pretty good bet.
Yeah, okay. All right, Doug, how about you?
Well, everybody knows how much I love Panini. Panini did something really great in 2018, and they produced one of the most underrated or at least under-acknowledged products in existence, Panini Treble Soccer. They've got a 2018 Panini Treble Gold, Cristiano Ronaldo, and a BGS slab. I think it's a beautiful set. Anytime I can try to get more Panini Treble, I'm happy to do so.
All right. Panini does do a good job of design. They do a great job of design. Give them all the credit for that in the world. Guys, all of these auctions and thousands of more items are all available at PWCC Marketplace. Go check it out right now. The weekly auction ends this Sunday on these items. So go check it out right now at PWCC Marketplace. Okay, guys, you did a topic. Oh, man, the debate's about to continue, Teapot, here. I'm going to get fired up again because you did a video this last weekend on the Market Movers YouTube channel, the Day to Die video, and I don't agree with some of what you had to say. I don't agree.
Did you watch the video?
Yes, okay, yes. All right. Why is there so much of a premium for PSA 10s? Tell us.
You brought some visuals last week.
Yes.
I want to start with a quick question. We'll go quickly. Doug, and we'll put these on the screen. Which of these three cards would you rather have?
Aurora.
Aurora, okay. Which of these three cards, Jeff, would you rather have?
I like the Kaboom. I'll do the Kaboom.
All right. Well, what if I told you that the minute you put this red, white, and blue Luka into a PSA 10 slab, it sells for more than the Aurora in a PSA 8 and more than the Kaboom Raw? Because it's in a little plastic case with a number on it and the opinion of somebody you've never met saying this is a... It's a common card. The video comes down to two things. Price differences between grades and half grades.
Right.
So PSA 10 versus 9 or 9 versus 8.5. And then gem mint grades across the companies, and we're seeing like a 1.7 or greater multiplier between PSA 10s and SGC 10s and BGS 9.5s. That's the nuts and bolts of it. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, I actually think in that example, that makes sense to me. Like, I think your argument against it makes sense to me because we're talking about a red, white, and blue prism. We're talking about a prism card that is highly produced, that is mass produced.
It's a retail product. It's not a hobby hit.
Where the whole argument breaks down, though, in my opinion, is when you get to more rare cards. Because when you get to more rare cards, moving up the ladder, if you get into a situation where there's only a few PSA 10s on the market of a particular card, they're hard to find, they're hard to come by, there's maybe a little more PSA 9s, maybe a little, in my opinion, then it makes sense. The premiums make sense. And the you know, eye-popping example of the Jordan card, right, of the Jordan that recently sold at Heritage Auctions, a 1986 Fleer PSA 10 Michael Jordan sold for, what, $380,000 or thereabouts. And you look at this, you're like, wait a minute. It's crazy. Yeah. That's why is that so much more than the BGS 9.5, the SGC? Well, in that case, that was a gold NBA. That was one of the best Jordan 10 copies in existence.
Yeah.
The premium makes sense.
It's
the
a same, demand issue.
The same way that the premium makes sense, the same way that if a 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle PSA 10, one of the three, ever went on the market, it would sell for way, way more than the PSA 9. And the PSA 9 sell for way, way more than the PSA 8s. And that actually makes sense to me. I think that premium makes sense because its scarcity and rarity and the fact that it is so pristine is what makes it so scarce and rare.
I think it makes more sense on vintage things than it does ultramodern.
For ultramodern, for a lot, I get where you're coming from. How about you, Doug?
I agree a lot with what you said, and I actually do think it makes sense for ultramodern in a way. I think there's a lot of smart people both in our comments section of this video and across the internet that will tell you buy the card, not the grade. That's a common phrase you'll hear. But here's what we run into. We run into modern cards especially, and even with the Jordan, not especially rare or scarce card. In a world where scarcity and rarity is largely manufactured with serial numbers, the only way to set those cards apart is through grading. Now, I do think too much emphasis is put on grading, but that's what we're getting into. How do you take this card and make it more rare than its counterparts? It's only through grading. And I think that's where, you know, PSA 10s now have to have the premium, or just 10s in general, regardless of the grading company. But why is PSA more valuable than the other companies? Well, they've just kind of set themselves apart. They've run away from the competition over the past few years. And there's a multitude of reasons why, and we kind of addressed that on a previous episode, so I won't dive too far into that. But PSA has separated themselves from the pack, and I think that there's justifiable reasons as to why. And I think PSA 10s have also, or, you know, 10s in general have pulled away as a way to make a card more scarce and more rare when we just don't have that in general, with the exception of maybe some few case hits.
I would say watch the video. There's a lot of context. I know I definitely made it clear. Yeah. I wasn't bashing on grading or PSA. This is the last thing I'll say. in your a card near and dear to your heart, your LeBron Gold Chrome Refractor rookie. I would not take that. It's a BGS 9, right? I would not take that card and sell another $900,000 of your cards to get a PSA 10 of that same card. I wouldn't do that if I were you.
When a card is truly rare, truly scarce,
I would, because
do it.
I want the most rare one. I want the most rare one, you know?
Yeah, but, I mean, I guess if you have the means, but when a card is truly rare and truly scarce, the grade doesn't really matter that much to me. I've got a card that's out of 5 in grading right now. It's probably going to come back a 7 or an 8, and I'm not going to be that disappointed about it.
Hey, you know what? To each his own. One of the great things about the hobby is people can collect how they want to collect.
100%.
And what's important and matters to me doesn't have to matter to you, and what's important to you doesn't have to matter to me, and that is completely fine. Navigate how you want to navigate. So I appreciate the opinions, even though I think you're wrong. There's probably many, many people.
In fact,
I know a lot of people, by the way, if you read the comments on that video, everybody in the comments thought you were right. Everyone, it was like very glowing of the video, and a highly watched
video.
That was a big video too. It was a big video.
Yeah, I don't know how many views it's up to now.
Yeah,
but
it's getting a lot of attention. All right, guys, that video, by the way, that Teapot did, that is on the Market Movers YouTube channel. It's a different YouTube channel. You guys should go check that video out. Apparently, very explosive video, but make sure you're subscribed to the Market Movers YouTube channel. Okay, I want to take a quick moment to let you guys know about this awesome product that Stand Up Displays has. These are their Major League Baseball officially licensed card stands. And now that Top Series 1 Baseball has come out, and we've got more baseball products right around the corner, as well as the baseball season itself, it's a good time to pick up these card stands of your favorite teams. You got the Dodgers, you know, you got the Royals, you got any team you want. They're all available right now on standupdisplays.co. Once again, get your custom Major League Baseball card stands on standupdisplays.co. Okay, let's jump into our mailbag topic today, guys. We got a couple of good ones. The first, you probably saw over the weekend that there was a case of 1979 OPC hockey, unopened sealed case of boxes, sold for $3.72 million, setting an all-time record for any type of sealed case. This was an amazing discovery. It's the only known full unopened case in existence from, of course, Wayne Gretzky's rookie year, right? This is the iconic Wayne Gretzky rookie card that in a PSA 10, by the way, does well over $1 million, millions of dollars of that card, right? And what's funny is that this was from a collector who had, you know, stored away a whole bunch of boxes in Canada, and he didn't even know what he had. And it was ultimately his son who found the case behind stacks and stacks of other stuff. It's a cool story. But my question for you guys, what do you hope next gets unearthed from like some storage locker or something like that that nobody even realizes exists anymore? Teapot, I'm gonna start with you on this one.
I'll go quick fire. I've got 5 different things.
Okay.
First would be a Hannes Wagner T206 in like record shattering condition.
Okay.
Just finding a raw one somewhere stored that would come out and just flip the whole collecting world on its head. We know that's a big card. How about a really well-reserved Pelé rookie? Like seeing one of those come out. There's soccer collectors all over the world, soccer fans. I wonder what lies out in the different corners of this planet that we live on in different collections. I always get really excited when I see big 90s grails surface. Mm-hmm. A cool one that came out recently was a Tim Duncan Gem Masters 1/1 that was on PWCC. That has a really cool story behind it. 1/1 from metal. And then I'm personally looking for Andre Drummond's 2013, 14, and 16 black prisms. If you have those, please contact me.
Did they ever surface before?
I've never seen him.
Sales history or anything?
Nope. And then Luka Doncic, 2018 black prism 1/1.
Okay.
That technique, we don't know if that's been ripped or not.
Yeah.
I have a theory that maybe somebody has it and is also stockpiling the sealed product to like keep the value up, but who knows?
I'm not surprised to hear that one. That one certainly makes a lot of sense to me. Those were all good ideas. What about you, Doug?
We should have had a conversation first. He took 2 of mine.
That's
so
okay.
Now I'm left without much to say. I will say, who verified this sealed case? Because immediately my mind goes to Pokemon and G.I. Joe. This is the second G.I. Joe reference on the show today, which is unusual, but I can't think about, you know, unearthing these sealed cases without thinking about the big incident.
So what they did do in this case, and I actually wondered the same thing,
okay.
They actually opened the case.
Did they really?
It was a sealed case. They opened the case. They got all the boxes out. They then inspected all of the boxes. They then resealed it all in BBCE wrappers.
Okay.
It was BBCE. But this time, they didn't just believe the case by looking at it. They actually opened it up.
Yeah. So I thought, just like you were saying, I was thinking about the Pele rookie. I was thinking about the Luka Black. I was also thinking about the 2017 Chrome Mbappe Superfractor that's never been seen. And I was thinking about the Steph Curry Topps Chrome Superfractor as well.
So right. That was actually my answer.
Yeah,
you took
yes.
My answer. My answer was I hope that somebody finds a – well, I hope – you know, there's very, very few boxes of 2009 Topps basketball that exist. You almost never see them sell – on any auction websites. I've never seen a case sell in like the last couple of years. So if a case showed up of 2009 Topps basketball, people might go, my God, maybe the Steph Curry Superfractor one of one is in that. Doug, do you know who owns two complete sealed cases of 2017 Topps?
It can't be you. Chrome, you're terrible.
UEFA.
You're terrible at investments. It can't be you.
Two sealed cases. If I tell you how much I bought them for versus how much they're worth today, you would blush. It was one of my best investments ever. Bought those for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, I hope somebody puts that in your spreadsheet.
Yeah, I know.
We're ripping them on Cards HQ Breaker Channel live tonight.
But no, I'm just holding on to those sealed. I actually showed just the other day, I was showing Ryan and Carter my PWCC vault, and I've got like, I got a whole bunch of like really crazy sealed wax cases in there that I bought in like, you know, 2019.
You've got 2014 Prism World Cup?
World Cup, yeah. I got a sealed case of that.
That's a big one for me.
Yeah,
I
got a sealed case of that. Yeah. A lot of fun stuff. All right, let's go to our second mailbag topic today. And this is Panini signing LIV Golf. And my question for you guys is this a big deal? Are collectors going to care about this at this point? I would think that they would. I would think that golf cards are a good thing, that we might have Prism golf cards. But last year, Upper Deck came out with two new sets of golf cards. It was the first time that new golf cards had hit the market in a while. I expected those sets to be popular, to be met with some fanfare, and there wasn't a lot of like discussion or excitement around them, it felt like. Topps came out with Topps Chrome Tennis not too long ago. I thought that was going to be kind of cool and people were going to get really excited. I didn't hear a lot about it. Are we at the point now in the sports card market where like some of these alternative sports just don't draw the attention? People don't care about them as much? Back in 2021, when we were at the peak, everybody would have been all over this, I think. But today, do people feel burned on the alternative sports and they just don't care? Is LIV Golf a big deal? Teapot, I'm going to start with you.
I think it comes down to the product execution. When I look at like the Topps Chrome Tennis, I was excited about that. There hadn't been tennis cards in a long time. I like tennis. And then the checklist didn't actually have anybody that you would expect on it. It was like Pete Sampras and then nobody else. Like there was not a lot of like high profile athletes on that checklist. I think it was like Coco Gauff and that's it. So that has a lot to do with it, the product execution. Some of the Upper Deck metal products that we've seen come out in the last few years, people were really excited about, and those also, the execution was surprisingly not very good on them, in my opinion. So I think it has a lot to do with that as much as it does the sports, but then maybe it's just that golf, maybe they just don't have the collector base, you know, that you would expect. There's obviously a ton of golf fans out there, and there are some really high-profile athletes. Maybe it's this transition period where it was like Tiger, 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 and now there's a bunch of really good golfers kind of winning, you know, majors. I don't know. At the end of the day, it's the LIV Golf thing is definitely not something that I'm particularly excited about. I was kind of frustrated by that whole situation and people splitting and leaving for different leagues. Now we see that in soccer with people going to play in Saudi Arabia. So, meh. I don't know.
Okay. All right. But you would think Prism golf cards might draw some additional excitement, right? What do you think,
Doug? I would think so.
I think Panini missed the cut with this one.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. No, they're not on the leaderboard for you.
They're in the
I think if this was branded Prism Golf and not LIV Golf, it would be received differently, maybe just slightly. I think LIV kind of has a bad connotation to it with their sort of feud with PGA and, you know, stealing some of the top talent and kind of splitting that up into different divisions. I also think the cards having weird team names across the top kind of doesn't do it for me. If it was just the golfer and the golfer's name and not the Rattlesnakes or what, you know, they have these really awkward team names across the top. Get rid of that and I feel better about it as well. But I think alternative sports in general, and, you know, going back to what you said about 2021, people would have been all over this. Well, I think people have kind of learned their lesson. You know, people were always, you know, basketball and football and baseball got oversaturated and overpriced, and people became pretty well informed on those products. People started looking for the next thing. Jump into F1, let's jump into UFC. And those things would blow up. WWE and then nosedive. I think people Maybe we've gotten burned by some of that, and they're looking to avoid getting burned in a similar fashion. So, you know, things like Chrome Tennis or Prism Golf aren't going to explode because people may have learned their lesson, you know, jumping into alternatives too quickly.
Yeah.
And that's probably what, you know, the lack of fanfare, in my opinion.
Yeah, all fair points. I hope it gets a little bit of buzz when it comes out. I think it's going to be fun to see some new golf sets. But
I just hope the autos are in there if there are autos.
Oh, gosh. Burn. All right, guys, we hope you appreciated today's episode. If you did, please hit like and subscribe. Check out these cool card stands at standupdisplays.co, as well as the weekly auction at PWCC Marketplace. And we'll see you next time. Take care.